Brendan!
Mark.
Oh, how buddy.
How's the podcast conference hype going?
It started well when I got to the train station and my train was cancelled.
Oh.
So I had to get on. Well, I got on a slightly later train that was then a much slower train because it has far, far more stops.
Right.
But I'm here in my little hotel, which is on the side of a pub. There's not really a reception. There's just a pub. But it's quite... It's a small room, but it's kind of quite nice and kind of a little bit low-level swanky.
Nice.
So to the right, as I look now, I have a really sophisticated coffee machine that takes Whoa. Coffee pods. These ones nice. Are recyclable.
Great.
Which is dope. And the problem is I sacrificed one of them to the pod gods because I thought, okay, I can figure this out. I want coffee. I'm not going to be bested yeah. by a machine.
No,
by a robot. No coffee yeah. robot's going to deny me my caffeine.
No.
So it's got a big chunker of a locking mechanism.
I felt that shame. But yeah, I'm glad to not be a robot.
Oh, no, it wasn't. I wasn't throwing any. I wasn't throwing. Oh, no, certainly not at you. So it's got a chunky sort of lock thing. That it's really like, so you've got to like hunk this thing, and then you can open the lid of the machine.
Okay.
And then as you open the lid,
mm-hmm.
the pod that was in the little capsule
goes back into the back.
Commits suicide and yeah. goes back into the thing.
Oh, I
and
see.
So I didn't
you put
know
it
that.
In, and then you opened it up again.
Yeah, and so I don't have a. So I've missed one of my pods now. And I did think about upending the entire machine and trying to get, because it's wasteful, trying to, I sure. want one of my pods. Because now I'm down, because I've got exactly three pods, or I had exactly three pods. I've just had one. I've only got one pod left. So I'm going to have to ask for more pods. So the instant coffee they've got is only decaf. And so that's not going to help me come Thursday morning. But, you know, those are problems for future Mark. And yeah. it's all going to be fine.
it's all going to be fine.
It's all going to be fine. I got in, and the first thing I saw was they've got a giant fan. So there's a giant fan behind me, which means that I can sleep tonight. Because it's warm here. It's warm today. I'm in shorts. And I've been on the tube. And, yeah. So I'm here. I've got a whole evening in front of me. I've got to find something to eat. Probably go down the pub, have a little something to eat there. And turn it in, have a nice night in on my own, and then get ready for the conference in the morning.
Sweet.
So that's me.
Nice, mate.
I'm going to close this coffee machine pod thing now, and hopefully I'm going to break anything. Everything's so heavy on it. It feels
like it, premium.
Oh
no.
Fucking, I mean,
don't
what's
break
the
it.
Word? No, I don't want to break it. I'm terrified of breaking it. Premium, yes, but also fussy. It's both premium and breakable. And now I found the world's tiniest cupboard, which houses very thoughtfully an ironing board and an iron.
Great.
And the world's thinnest mirror. And the bathroom is surprisingly bougie.
Nice.
It's a really nice bathroom. I thought for such a small room, I was like, oh no, this isn't a communal bathroom situation, is it? Like a hostel. No, mm-hmm. no, there's a bathroom over there and it's surprisingly swanky. It's yeah. got checkerboard floors and a light that comes on and like a whole like wet room shower. It's nice. It's kind of nice.
Ooh, I like that. I like
but
that.
It is up 17 flights of stairs.
And do you have to walk up?
Yeah.
Okay.
With my bag. So
you get
the,
your
the guy,
you have
do
good
get
mental
your
workout.
So the guy, yeah. So the guy came up with me and, you know, said, if there's anything you need, call. And I'm like, thanks.
I'm one of those portable oxygen tanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, please. So that's my life. What's going on with you?
Have you ever heard of the Mankind Project?
So the Mankind Project, I have heard of, and I don't know enough about it to be dangerous, so tell me more. And as we do that, yeah. I'm going to turn off my camera.
Yeah, I don't know enough to be dangerous either, but maybe no, maybe I do. So I went to, so my friend Percy, who leads the men's groups, he has taken it. He has gone to it.
Well, I just realized I was nodding furiously, and there's absolutely no point in me doing that.
Save your neck muscles. It's the Mankind Project. What it is like a rite of passage for men. It's the rite of passage that's missing in our cult, Western culture. It's like a weekend long hero's journey for a man to go through to really face intensely their demons, find brotherhood, and come out the other side, welcomed back into society. It's like this whole kind of ritual thing for the everyman to wake up a little bit. And so Percy had done this many years ago, and then he's gone back many, many, many times since, over the past like 15 or 20 years, to go and like have the there's like the initiate kind of, you go where you've never gone before, and then you can go back to be one of the people that helps the initiate go through. And so there's kind of multiple roles of attending this retreat, if you want to. It's not a retreat, it's a experience, I guess. And yeah, he's kind of just raved about it. And he's, when he and I have talked about wanting to put on any sort of men's retreat type thing, he's referenced this and being like, I want you to do this because I want to have our thing be influenced by that and be informed by that, because that is greatness and we should have more of it. And I'm like, sweet. Like, I want to experience that. I want to learn more. I want to do something that's very effective and all that. So the weekend, it's around $1,000. It's like, you can get it cheaper if you get an early discount or whatever, but it's like, it's a chunky piece of money for just a weekend, but it's a big life experience. And what is life about if not to have life experiences? So I'm planning on going to one, but I have the schedule hasn't worked out yet, and we haven't set aside the money for it yet. But in the meantime, there was a welcome home dinner for initiates that just came back from a recent experience, and Percy invited me and everybody else that was a part of his men's groups along, and we got to see what the people are like outside of that environment and have this gathering where it's kind of meta discussion about the work, and welcome back these initiates. And like, it was really interesting. The people there were like definitely the kind of people I want to be around and model myself after. Like, they seemed really grounded and earnest and interested. There was no sort of like putting on a face or being anything more than generous, and it was great. It was really great. Good people. And if this weekend, if this process turns out these kind of people, like, that's I'm very interested.
That is, yeah.
I also signed up for a men's weekend retreat for the weekend after next. That is not the Mankind Project.
Ooh, what is that?
That is the Ecstatic Brotherhood, I think. I can't remember the name of it. So, at the Mankind Project...
That doesn't sound like a cult at all, so that's good.
it definitely seems much more mm-hmm. culty. Well, actually, they're both culty-ish in different ways. Wonderfully so.
at the that's not what the really definition of a cult, but that's okay.
We did all get passed out little Dixie cups of fruity flavored liquid to drink in a ceremony at the Mankind Project dinner. So I've already drunk in the Flavor Aid.
The Flavor Aid.
It was sparkling apple cider, which was great. Actually. While I was there with Percy, he invited a friend who also goes to a different men's group that he runs. So we hadn't met yet, but we're doing the same thing. And we hit it off, and it was a really nice time. And he's going to be going to this men's retreat in a week and a half. And I was like, hey, tell me more about it. And he was like, you should come. I was like, dang, I really should. One of the things I remember from it is that they do dancing, free dancing. Like, they call it ecstatic dancing, which I had never heard that term before, but it sounds like the same kind of dancing that I do at a rave. It's just like free form, just moving with the music, kind of unscripted movement to song. And that is exciting to me. There's also, it says there's like a focused container of men held with experienced facilitators who want to know you, encounters with men of deep compassion, healing time with the power of natural elements, small and large group spaces to process and share parts of your life, and rituals that honor our ancestors, our grief, and our gratitude. So, yeah, should be fun. Out in nature. The gorge.
I worry about a focused container of men, because that just sounds like, I just think of like a Tupperware thing where you just, like, you have to burp the lid.
I'm sure we'll all get our gases.
Oh, no, I've got a focused container of men.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yep. Okay. All right.
Yep. It'll be kind of cool to like hang out with this guy that I just met and more solidify our new friendship together, because we really hit it off, and I think that could be cool to like immediately have something that we're doing together. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, he made a new friend. My question, I mean, not that you're taking questions, but question is,
yes, Mark.
Thank you. Stedman Gazette. This sounds like it could be something quite introspective and sort of figuring out yourself and your connection to the world. And there's lots of sharing and healing and that kind of stuff. Is it different from the Mankind Project? Because my understanding of men's initiation is we need that because men aren't initiated into the world, and so they behave like little Elons.
Yeah.
I wonder, is that different from this retreat that you're going on now? Is there an outward-facing element, or is it mainly about a sort of reconnecting with the interior?
The Mankind Project seems to be way more intense in breaking open the breaking down the walls and breaking open the heart and really piercing the mask that we put on. The Ecstatic Heart Brotherhood is much more about like facilitating a good environment to be yourself and a man in the society, and allowing yourself some relief, some expression, some connection, but not necessarily diving deep and piercing.
Okay.
That's how I understand the two. One could be a bit more, like the Mankind Project's a bit more like a marker in your life. Like there's before and after the Mankind Project, whereas the Ecstatic Heart is more like just an ongoing maintenance of goodness.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
I am currently reading, I've only just started a book called Moral Ambition, which is quite interesting. The author is Rutger Bregman. He's written, he's a sort of, has become a well-known writer. But essentially, yeah, he's just released this new book, and I heard him interviewed on a Guardian podcast and thought, oh, this might be the thing that I need. It's very spiky and spicy. And it is taking the view that you've probably got a bullshit job. You might say that you do something for the world, like you do a bit of recycling or whatever, but you're very talented and capable and smart. And to quote the Facebook, there's a Facebook meme, a meme from a guy from Facebook. There's something along the lines of, I've seen the brightest minds in my generation being used to get people to click ads.
Yeah.
and it's, so he goes through four different categories of types of job based on whether you are idealistic and ambitious. And so there's like neither idealistic nor ambitious, and that's kind of bullshit jobs. You've got like idealistic and ambitious, which is like that's the category that he wants people to move into. And then you've got these two categories in between. And it's all about like, if you are interested in having some kind of impact in the world, like how do you get started? What do you do? It's interesting. And like his first thing straight away is like, and I can't remember if we brought this up, if we talked about it last week, but like, his take is that not eating factory meat is what he considers the moral minimum. And I'm like, oh, God. Oh, boy. But I think, so I'm looking forward to The Spice, because I think it's going to be a very interesting read. And it's cool. Written with a degree of lightness. Not lightness in terms of like, it's not holding your hand and telling you, honey baby, it's going to be okay. It's very much not that. It's very much a kick up the ass, but it's a kick up the ass delivered with a little bit of rhetorical flair that makes it readable, I guess. It's not dry. It's certainly not dry. So I'm interested to see what that does, because in my head, like, I still have this idea that won't sit still and be quiet about ways that we can, like, basically how do we save the world. And you know, you and I have kicked around this idea, because I've still had this thing about, you know, the coming zombie apocalypse, and as much as I kind of joke about that, I also think the world is breaking down in lots of different ways, so societally. And I think, you know, I'm interested in the ways that we spark ideas. And I've been playing around with my take on the Ignite/Petra Kucha talks, of doing like 10-minute talks to save the world. You may remember my old, I ran for a couple of weeks, having an experiment with a podcast called 15 Minutes to Save the World, which was just me dicking around. But what if you got a bunch of smart, funny, and entertaining speakers? Speakers don't have to be entertaining, but if the talks were entertaining. Sure. And so it was an enjoyable night, and it's all like each person presents their idea for how the world could be saved. I was just kind of offhand chatting with a couple of people yesterday, and they were like, yeah. And then we, like, people could organize them in their towns and cities and stuff. And I was like, oh gosh, I actually hadn't thought that big. You know, it's like, I actually hadn't gone that far. And now I'm like, okay, what if we did that? And, my brain's a buzz, man, in really fun and interesting ways about, you know, how the world can be made well, just you know, at least how I can try and help, at least as I described it yesterday to my friends, how I can go up the mountain with my teaspoon and start moving the mountain.
I love that when you were describing the book and the different types of companies, it really struck me how there are companies and jobs that make not just a difference, like in terms of goodness in the world, but actually do something, actually produce a thing, actually change physically or otherwise something about the world and what and how we're living in it, make some sort of progress, whether that's good or bad progress, it's still moving something forward. And then there are jobs that only exist to move money, either into their, you know, trying to get income or move money around, and that has no physical change on the world at all. There's no benefit to the world for that. It's just individual.
Rutger describes it as people writing reports that people don't read.
Yeah. I was this morning I was thinking about that kind of difference in a slightly different like lens, where like governments were only kind of created by people who couldn't do anything but just wanted to feel important, so they talked and like decided to make up all these rules that everybody else had to live by. And you know, it's not necessarily true, but just kind of like a funny train of thought. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way about governments as I do about capitalism and corporate profits. A little bit.
Yeah, and then we get into the difficult trap with capitalism, in that capitalism, as I've begun to understand it anyway, capitalism needs a degree of bullshit jobs, because it needs people to be employed. So
It needs the money movement.
Yeah, exactly, because it needs people to buy things, because they don't have enough money to self-actualize, you know, to own the means of production. And so... this was Grace Blakely talking about this in terms of AI, and like, is, you know, open AI and the rest going to destroy our jobs? And like, I think she slightly sidestepped that, you know, will it? And it was more like they sort of can't, or it sort of won't happen, because because capitalism needs people to be employed. And that's a cycle that we've got to figure out how, because like, and I get sad when that sounds very childish, but I get sad when I hear about people talk about their livelihood being destroyed, because it's or you know, their job being lost because of AI. And I'm like, shouldn't it be great that AI could do your job? You're upset because you're going to lose your income.
Right.
And I mean, if it's something you truly love to do, you know, of course, we're just making the fucking argument for a UBI. Fine. Let's cut straight. I don't need to do all the talking. We know where we're going on that one.
You've been down this road before.
Yeah. It's like, I don't actually have to complete those sentences, but yeah. And that's a problem. I don't even know how to begin to solve, let alone like, there's one thing of being like, that's a really hard problem, I know what the solution is, but I don't know how I can help. This is just like, I don't even know where to begin.
Does capitalism hate the idea of a UBI?
I think it has to be opposed, because
this available money coming into the system constantly, a guarantee of money coming into the system constantly, right? It's not fresh money. It's not new money. It's from taxes. So, yeah, okay. And those taxes, hopefully, are coming from the people at the top, the companies. So they wouldn't like that, I guess.
No, it's essentially socialism.
Yay.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a cow and you can have some of, you know, equal amounts of people can have equal amounts of the milk or whatever it is. That's a very, very bad analogy, but
it literally is a different system. It is socialism, not capitalism. So yeah, of course.
No, and so I think that's the issue, because this is what I've begun to understand, because I think, you know, a couple of years ago I would have probably said, I'm not in favor of greed, but I understand the system and the system works. And the problem is, once you actually understand how the system is founded and what it relies on, which is essentially, and it's an unkind image, and it's an extremely ableist image, but I hope you'll forgive me, because it's a very, I think you can understand it. It's the holding it a midget at arm's length. The system relies on, let's say holding a leprechaun at arm's length. Something that doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, or the carrot in front of the horse that can never get the carrot.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, exactly. I think I was going for something that had more swinging and violence in it, because it doesn't really matter. You can keep swinging, you can keep hitting, but if you're the leprechaun and someone's got your head on, the hand on your head, and they can keep you at arm's length, there's not, you know, you can't do anything to the system.
No.
You can keep demolishing it, but you also kind of need the system. And so, yeah. And we actually talked about this when I was in my maximal hippie phase last year, the hippie season of my life. Where I'm now in a, like, I'm more like turbo action hippie, I think, is where I'm at now. we talked about the idea of the sort of the little commune.
Yes.
The little space where, you know, we create this system and you know, we regulate what comes in and what comes out, which is a little bit authoritarian to a degree that I don't like, and that's also a problem.
I mean, I don't think of it as much that way. It's not like I would not put down hard and fast authoritarian rules.
No, like, I think both you and I are more anarchic or anarchistic.
This is what we hold to be self-evident and true and good. And this is the best, this is what our ideal is that we're aiming for. If we need to make compromises or live in the world a different way temporarily to exist and to transition into whatever new phase that we want, like, we can't, like, sure, there's going to be lines we don't cross, like, including, like, killing people, but, like, there's not going to be lines, or there's going to be lines that are fuzzy. Like, sometimes we can only get the thing from Amazon because they have made themselves too good to not use or whatever, you know?
Too big. They are...
Yeah, in our quest to destroy Amazon, we might have to actually use and help Amazon along the way. It's...
Mycelial, that was the word I was trying to grasp for. They have grown like cordyceps through the fabric of our world. It's to such a degree that, you know, I'm getting a qualification to work with their cloud system because their cloud system powers probably like half, if not more, of the internet. And it's inescapable. It's in Netflix, it's in your TV, it's probably in your coffee machine. You know, if you have any smart device, it's powered by Amazon.
And I loved our little conversation about that. I mean, like, all the more reason to burn it all down. And then, and you replied something like, we should probably teach humanity how to survive without it first. And my...
Oh, yeah, we had this over WhatsApp, didn't we?
Yeah. And my reaction to that is so much like, if you know, we've been around for humans have been around for 100,000 years, and over the last 60 years, being generous, that the internet has existed, we already have forgotten how to live without the internet. Like, it clearly is corrupting us and making us forget what it is to be human.
I honestly think we can have said that about any major advancement. It's not that I don't buy it, but it's got to be wound back because the Industrial Revolution, changed everything because we moved from, you know, back in the time when basically everyone was a farmer, we moved to a time where things could be centralized into areas and commerce happened. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, you know, commerce can not all steps forward. Commerce is a perfectly good step forward.
I know. I'm joking.
You know, and we need that. But yeah, and that's a certain number of thousands of years old. And the idea of centralized money, that, you know, that got rid of the barter system. So now you can't just say, I've got this skill. Can I trade you, you know, these beans for this skill? We've lost the art of doing that. Like, if we are going to burn it all down, we have to understand, we have to teach ourselves how to roll that back. And I don't think it's good enough to say, like, well, you should know how to live without the internet because there are so many things we've had to roll back, or we would have to roll back, because the internet, again, is based on electricity, and most of us don't know how that works. There's a lovely line I think it's the last Hitchhiker's book where Arthur meets his daughter Random, and he has this watch. He shows her the watch and, you know, he sort of explains that it keeps ticking. I think it had maybe broken finally. And she's like, how does this work? And he says, clockwork. Well, what's that mean? And he's like, he doesn't know.
Yeah.
Because, and that's what I love, because in any sci-fi film, the character would just know how this stuff works. But in the real world, you just go, I haven't needed to know that information. And that is humanity. For this was actually really, really well categorized in the first Sherlock Holmes short story, A Study in Scarlet, where Watson discovers that Holmes doesn't know that the Earth revolves around the sun.
Okay.
And they actually even did that. I'd forgotten, but they actually echoed that in the TV series as well, because it's like if he knew it, he deleted it from his brain because it had no material impact on him whatsoever in his ability to function as a human being. And humanity does that. And so we have to relearn a lot of stuff that only a few people, because like all the knowledge is there, but it's not distributed in the same way.
That's funny.
So I think let's not burn it all down. Let's be prepared. Let's know where the people are who know what to do if it does go up in smoke.
Yes.
And let's look after them.
Yeah, the people who want to rid themselves of this toxicity will do so and live better lives for it. And the ones that don't will also exist.
When you say this toxicity, to what are you referring?
Good question.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And thank you.
No, sorry.
Thank you.
After you.
I'm definitely, I feel like I'm simultaneously being hyperbolic and also underplaying it. And ooh. I don't just mean the
you're just being bollock.
Toxicity. I'm just being bollock here. Bollock out.
Load of bollocks.
The toxicity, of course, from social media and where human expression goes to be completely anonymous and gross and frank and unkind, where we think we have no impact, so we get to display our worst selves. That I think is toxicity, and the ability for, like, obviously television has 24-hour news, and that is gross. I think the internet takes it to another level with things that you can interact with, and like it's just a whole, you can just dive deep forever in whatever you want to of reality or fiction and believe it however you like. And I think that's also dangerous and toxic. There's more information than a person can or should know. I truly believe that a human is designed to understand their local surroundings and not necessarily of the earth. Maybe conceptually, but not in details, and know about like tribes in Rwanda that are suffering. You know, like this is more compassion than our bodies should be stretched to, or our hearts, I guess. And so I feel like that's all a bit damaging, and it takes away a person's compassion and an ability to be there present in the moment for their local things. It's taking their mind elsewhere. And you know, I'm also all for humanitarian aid and effort and like spreading the goodness. But I think maybe that the people that have more ability to take on that burden should be in those jobs. Like everybody that's perfect for the job should be in that job, and everybody that's not perfect for the job should not be in a job, just across the board, all with all jobs. And then that will fix the world. it's not the way it works.
Yeah.
What if there was, though, a service that would be like, hey, I think you'd be better suited for this thing. Let's do this other. How about you move over here? You'll be better over there. You'll be less grumpy and you'll help more people. Since we're talking about ways to help the world.
Yeah.
I would not make it to a speaker level on your display.
On my little event.
Time to town. Your event, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
First off, I think you categorized everything pretty much as I would, to the extent as well that we're not equipped to know that much or care about in any great detail what happens to tribes away from us. And it's just it ain't good that because no good can come of it. In terms of the job thing, I wonder how many people. What's your take there? That there's too many people that are in the wrong jobs.
Kinda, yeah. Yeah. I think the majority of people are unhappy in their job or are resigned to be fine with it because they need a job. And I think that a job should not just bring a paycheck, but should bring joy to your life. I think that it's essential because it's the majority of your waking hours.
The difficulty with that is that someone's got to clean the sewers.
Yeah, and some people don't mind that.
Someone's got to wipe the asses of old people.
Some
people don't mind wiping the asses of old people because it's about caring for people. Absolutely, and yeah. I'm putting it in a coarse way on purpose. But I think there are absolutely jobs that need to be done that aren't joyful.
Of course, and I don't mean that. Just like the way that I have and try to promote the achievement of serenity and enlightenment doesn't mean that you're joyful all the time and everything is good, mm-hmm. but it is a source of connection and goodness in one's life, or you know, understanding, you know, being a part of community, knowing that you're doing this for a good reason. Like, people have jobs and they know it's bullshit. Like, a nurse wiping someone's butt, like, they are directly helping another person.
Not a bullshit job. Yeah.
Yeah. A person moving papers around and filing reports that just don't do anything, it just means somebody else has to do more work and fill out that page and whatever. Like,
the difficulty with that is that the jobs that need to be done, which is just a perverse aspect of our society, is that the jobs that most need to be done are the jobs that pay the least. Apart from doctors, who get paid reasonably well and they do a pretty good job, but nurses get paid fuck all, and
right.
you know, in some respects, may work longer hours and they deal with a lot more in certain circumstances than some doctors. Anyway,
imagine going to the App Store. You're looking for a new game to play on your phone, and there's only good choices because those games were built because somebody had a game they wanted to create. And then, okay, yeah, there's also a monetary value to it. But, like, there wasn't a monetary value that somebody wanted to extract, so they decided to build a game in order to extract that money. That's where my mind's at.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And on that note, Undo has left Acast.
Whoa, tell me what? Tell me more.
Yeah, I can tell who doesn't listen to my podcast. That's fine.
I haven't been listening to the podcast lately. No. Yeah. I'm subscribed and it's pinned, but I have not listened.
Because they are extractive, and it's interesting. It's like I create 100% of the value,
yeah,
because I write these things from whole cloth, and you know, I am building on the shoulders of other things, and for the most part those are things that I pay for. Like, I use a service called Blinkist, which I pay for, and you know, there's the, you know, ChatGPT, which
makes
helps
a lot of sense. You use Blinkist for that.
Oh yeah, yeah. Some books I do get, but like, it would be ruinously expensive to,
for,
you know,
sure,
and
yeah,
very difficult to run things without a service like Blinkist.
And time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it's only been a small number of books. Either way, like, I'm creating value because I'm sitting there and I'm synthesizing ideas and I'm writing them into TED Talks. And Acast provides some value. For that value, they take 50% of what I make.
Wow.
Which is a lot, and I didn't realize it was that much. But that's fine. I'm not too pissy about that. But because
100% of nothing is nothing.
Exactly, exactly. But then for that, the devil's bargain is that I don't really get control over your experience as a listener. So if their system wants to schedule the same ad four times, sometimes maybe even twice in the same ad break, which has happened with other shows that I've listened to, like the same ad literally just plays again with no, you know, in the same ad slot. Like, I don't get any say in that. And then when it comes to the final straw for me, because like the whole experience has been unpleasant with them and has been vastly inferior, and so the last straw that broke the camel's back was just like, I'm trying to get paid, so what's the system here? You haven't set me up with the system that's supposed to do the payouts. And then they're being so mealy-mouthed about how they actually... So they're going to hold on to my money, the money that I've generated for them, and they've already taken their 50%, but they won't give me my 50% until or unless I make at least $100 a month. So if I make under, and it doesn't matter if in March I made 70 and in April I made 30... That doesn't count because in April I made 30, so I don't get paid.
Wow.
Yeah, which sucks.
That sucks. That's awful.
So I went back to Transistor and straight away within, and you know, the other thing, you know, about this sort of very subpar experience is I could wait literal days for a reply from their team. Mm-hmm. And I went to Transistor and I said, "Hi, Helen, I'm coming back." And I sort of knew because of the whole thing with Bramble. Sort of knew like
they could flip a switch back on for you.
They can and basically undelete my show. And I was like, "Can you restore the show?" And they were like, "Yeah." Done. Like, I said, listen, I'll start paying again, but just before I do, I just wanted to check this thing. Yep, no worries, paid. Here are the shows that I'd like you to undelete, and within like an hour, everything was set back up again.
Amazing.
And it's just like that's how this is done, and I instantly felt valued, which I had completely felt unvalued despite the fact, and you know, and I said in the chat, like, listen, I know I don't matter to you, I know I'm small, I know I'm a tiny little creator, and I know I've been a pain in your ass, I'm aware of that, but you need to know that this is a really crappy experience.
Yeah.
And you know, sure, they've taken that on board. Almost any time I came with an issue or a question, it was a problem. Like, why does this tab do this? Oh, basically because that tab's broken. How does this... So there's this integration with Patreon. Yeah, that doesn't work anymore. We're phasing that out. Okay. How do I access information about my income from 2 months ago? You can't access that. We don't give you that information. So we only give you this month's information and last month's information. And after that, you don't get your numbers. Okay.
Wow.
The whole thing... is bad times. And like when I left Transistor before, it was only because I was, you know, going to try and run Bramble and set up my own thing. And I left Transistor again because I thought, well, I can save myself $40 a month, and you know, but bore them absolutely no ill will. And like as another contrast, when you sort of go, you know, every time I had a question about a feature in Acast, you know, the answer was disappointing. There are occasional real delightful moments with, for example, Transistor. Like I've talked about it before, and it's such a nerdy little thing, and but it actually makes a big difference to the workflow of someone that has a weekly show. Is that if I can do something in Logic, the audio editing app, and I can create a marker in there that says where the ads, you know, where my dynamic ads that are read by me, where they go. Yeah. And I can put those markers in, and then I can convert that to an MP3 file using Marco Arment's thing. And those get saved as chapters. I upload that file, and because the chapter's named a certain way, Transistor goes, cool, those are your ad points.
Yeah.
And I haven't got with every other system, what I have to do is go in and manually look at the time code, copy the time code, put it in the thing, make the adjustment, save it with Transistor. And it was the same with Acast, the same with most other companies. But with Transistor, because they're nerds, And they're kind of close enough to the bare metal, and they're small, and there's like, you know, a couple of tech guys, and you know, you can probably talk to the tech guy. And in fact, I've been on a Zoom call with one of them at one point, where and it was at the early stages of their ad insertion thing. It's like, because of that, you can do this thing that's undocumented, and it's like, try that, it might work. And it's like, holy shit, it did. And that's just saved minutes off my, you know, off my amazing time.
Yeah. Have you thought about working with like a company like Midroll or something?
No, because they don't really exist anymore. So Midroll got bought by EW Scripts, that then got bought by the SiriusXM people.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there were a few acquisitions sort of down the line. They became Stitcher, and then the Stitcher app went away, and I think the Stitcher brand has gone. And so it's all kind of been subsumed into, I can't remember the name of their hosting service.
Stitcher is actually a really great name for a dynamic ad insertion platform.
That's why it was called Stitcher.
Because
they were doing it back in the day, but I don't think they were giving creators any
it was just like a free platform with ads.
There were people getting very upset with Stitcher at the beginning because they weren't seeing any of that money. And I'm trying to remember the name of the service, but it's I think it's got rolled into a service owned by Sirius. What I'm actually going to, and it's really interesting, because so I've got this expo conference convention thing, you know, that I'm attending tomorrow, and I'm like, I'm actually going to be looking around and seeing, are there people who want to talk to me about being an ad rep? So can I work with a human being who will sell ads, who will go and find me the partnerships and work on commission?
Yeah.
Because they exist. And then I can do host read ads in my voice and you know, maybe make some, well, I'd make a hell of a lot more money than I would do on Acast. And then, you know, initially put that money into figuring out how to grow the show in other ways, get some help doing that so that I can focus on making the show. Because I would rather pay someone else to do, you know, the outbound, like, markety type stuff. Yeah, that's the thing. And I've submitted the show to Podcast Awards.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that does anything. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely think the host read ads are going to be a better bet. Because you're great at reading ads. So, and you've got the numbers.
Kind of, you'd say. Well, we'll see. It's been a rocky road. I've got some numbers. I've got enough numbers. Yeah. I think what it was, I've never had a difficulty admitting this because, you know, the curse of self-awareness or whatever. I knew the reason, really. And, you know, the income, that little bit of money has been nice. And they are actually giving me that money. And since I've been on Acast for the last, whatever it was, it's about 8 or 9 weeks, I've made about 200 something pounds, which is, you know, not nothing. And that's £200 that I wouldn't be making otherwise.
For sure. That's dope.
So there's that aspect. But it was also knowing that I qualified, I knew that I had something that met a bar, in the same way that, like, I get self-publishing. I get, like, why you should self-publish a book. It actually probably makes a lot more sense, and you'll probably earn more, and the book could be a lot more successful if you publish it yourself. But there is, it's not the same as someone looking at that and going, that counts. Like, that meets a bar. I'm human, turns out, and I like validation. And I got it. And so the one thing now is, like, I may have done some damage because I look at the numbers now and they are lower than they were.
Of course.
But what I'm confident in, after having put out the last episode, is that I'm not phoning it in. I'm still making good episodes.
Amazing.
I'm not worried that the decline is, you know, some of it I think was a little bit of right sizing because it was novel at the time, and that's fine. Some of it now may be just the disruption, and maybe people got pissed off with the ads, or maybe not. We will, that will all shake out in the wash. But I hope I haven't done. I don't think I've done irreparable damage, but I've certainly learned, you know, and I may have had my hand slapped a little bit. But what I do know, and you know, one of the thoughts that goes through my head, because I know and you know what my brain is like, I'm not phoning it in. I'm not just letting the episodes limp over the bar. Like, I'm still sweating the details. I'm still trying to get like this little bit to sound just right. And I did a lovely bit this week where I actually talk about autism, and there's a thing called the Coke bottle problem, or the Coke bottle. It's an analogy about like overwhelm and autism and stuff. There's just little flourishes in there that you might not notice, but it's there because of the fucking art of it, you know? I'm proud of it.
Awesome.
And I know that it's good. And yes, I've had the valor. I've also had the friends tell me that they think it's great. And, you know, that can do so much.
Yeah,
we don't always. Yeah, it does feel good, but like, we don't always take that on board. Because, you know, sure. We think, oh, you're my friend, whatever. But I've got the reviews.
Yeah, Margaret was just talking about, she went to go see a live podcast recording of We Can Do Hard Things.
Ah!
And one of the hosts, Glennon Doyle, her daughter does the theme song. And her daughter came on tour with them and was their opener and played some music. And they kind of gave a little bit of a history. I don't know. I think this was on a different podcast recording that Margaret listened to later. But they have given some history on how Glennon's daughter became a musician, and was like, she had made some music. It was shared with somebody that it then got around. A recording of it got to Brandi Carlile, who's a very big name in like the pop country-ish alternative kind of area. Like huge, like one of the biggest names. And she is a friend of Glennon's. And she's like, is this your fucking daughter? And then, so it wasn't like through nepotism, but it was through honest, actual, like good work that they and Brandi and Glennon's daughter started working together and put out an album together and other things. And her daughter's only like 18, I guess, or something like that, like a prodigy type scenario. and Glennon was always like, well, yeah, I mean, we think she's great, but we're her parents. We don't know. We can't.
Yeah, that's part of the deal.
It's going to be great no matter what. I can't hear it with external ears. No. I'm too biased.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, thinking of things that we're really proud of and maybe are too biased to objectively determine if it's good or not, I have finished my 3 mixes of the Get Better remix.
Yes! This is outstanding. You sent me a screenshot of the Logic Project.
Yes.
And my heart grew 3 sizes that day.
It was so much fun. Man, so I've been putting this off for a long time because, yeah. I've had stuff on.
That's not the name Stefan. You've had Stefan on. Yeah,
he's a good time. And yeah, so I also had a bunch of ideas, and like part of me was a bit like, I don't really know what I want to do for the extended mix, and then I also really know what I want to do for the extended mix, but I don't know how I want to do what I'm thinking of, or how to actually do what I'm thinking of.
Oh.
And I was like, okay, so then I got to like dive into it, and then I'm going to get stuck at some point. So then I'm going to need to go down a YouTube rabbit hole to learn, and then try it, and then stumble, and then learn some more, and then come back, and then maybe do it. And I'm like, I don't have the energy for that cycle right now. Because, you know, you hit that wall, and it's like a little bit discouraging, even though you know you're going to go learn it, but it's going to take some energy to learn it. And it's just like all a bit more than I had in me. And so I put it off and put it off and put it off. And finally, ironically, I was sick. And so I had nothing but time. And I was just sitting there. And I'm like, oh, my computer's there. I guess I'll... Let's just...
Have a little noodle.
So my plan has always been, since the beginning of time, is to have the original mix, which is the one that played at my birthday. And that's the Yeah, labeled the original mix. And then I would have a radio edit, which would be a shorter version that's a bit more punchy and just kind of like gets you to the good spot and gets out. And then there'd be the extended mix, which this is like my true vision of the song, like as a, if the song were to tell a story without the, not necessarily by what the content of the words says, but through the whole experience of listening to it, then that's what I'm trying to do with that. And so I didn't have the energy for that yet, but I was like, well, my original edit's already done. So boom, 30% done. Great. I can make the radio edit pretty easily by just cutting and clipping and then fixing the transitions and stuff. And so I went through and did that first. And so I got that sense of accomplishment. I'm like, yeah, okay, that was actually really easy. That took me like half an hour and it sounds fucking dope. And so, yeah, I got really happy with that. And I was like, well, okay, I'm already in Logic now. I'm a bit more comfortable. I'm a bit more like at ease here. So I copied it and made a new project and started tinkering. And then it just became so much fun that I never actually decided to go out and learn anything new. I had all of the skills that I needed to do what I wanted to do in me all along. And I just was able to stretch things out and duplicate things and move things around in a way that perfectly came out to be what I kind of wanted the entire time to I made a shorter version of what I actually wanted to make. I made a shorter version for the party because I didn't want, because I wanted to play, sure, 5 hours of music, but I wanted to get like a lot of songs in there. I didn't want to be overtaken by this, 10-minute long version of one song.
Your magnum opus.
During the pop section, like a lot of those songs, we only play like a minute or a minute 10 of a lot of those songs because I wanted to quickly get in and out and in and out to tell a story to get through this track list that I had set. And so I wasn't going to then on the back end take up a whole bunch of time with one song. So I made the original mix. It was good, 3.5 minutes or something, a nice length of time for a song. But yeah, this full version, oh, I'm so excited to share it with you. And I don't know if I should just, like, because now my next step is to publish it and then get it on the music stores.
Yeah.
And I'm part of me wants to just do that and then you can hear it when it's live. Or part of me wants to share it with you now to see what you think. A couple of cool aspects of it are in dance music, there's these sections. I've been thinking so much more about dance music lately and how differently it's structured than a traditional song of like first chorus, bridge, chorus. And there's no, like, they don't even really use those words. Like they're different sections entirely. They're not even it's not even a bridge. It's just entering in an amorphous abyss that's constantly changing and morphing around you until you swell up into this climax that can either just be like stripped from you or then just relaxed. And it's so much different. And so I was really trying to incorporate that kind of feeling from like stripping away a little bit more of the back and forth between verses and choruses, which is still there in the structure of the original mix and the radio edit, but is less so there in the extended mix. And it's way more like going into this landscape of sound and loops based off of these little sound bites from what he's saying. And there's one part where I had a clip of him saying, "We can get better because we're not dead." And I repeat that part a few times over this loop that builds to a kind of a cascading waterfall down into dead yet, 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 yet. And it builds up and up and up and up again with yets. And then it gets back up to this bigger crescendo again where that's kind of like, it's kind of like this death and rebirth. It's not even death and rebirth because you're not dead yet. You're still here. You're still fighting through. You're pulling yourself back out of the abyss that you're in. You get up to the top, and then you get this big dance break again after a slower drumless section. And yeah, oh man, I just get chills thinking about it. And I'm so excited to release it to the world. And as always, anarchy is not lawlessness, because we all know how to treat ourselves and others innately. We have the laws within us. It's the absence of an oppressive government. The reason we think of looting and destruction is that we are an immune system. We see a virus and we want to destroy it. So with the veil abstracted by the removal of government control, we can see clearly that capitalism is an infection and deserves to be destroyed for our well-being. Correct me if I'm wrong. Have you ever heard of the Mankind Project?
I did content for 5 minutes. What was that? Sorry. Sorry, we have an interminable delay, but we'll get through it. It's going to be fine.
Have you ever heard of the Mankind Project?
Yeah, I found this when I was... Oh, my God.
Such
I
a long
found
delay.
The Mankind Project.
Oh, my God.
Oh, shut up. I found this is going to be the podcast. This is the episode for the rest of the day.